Good morning and welcome to this episode of Under the Helmet with, as I say, about a month left before the start of the Classic. We will jump full bore into getting to know not just the returning team, but some of the new teams. One of the newer teams that has piqued my interest are the Atlanta Tigers. As such, I'm talking to the owner of the Atlanta Tigers, Coach Corey Milton. Coach, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, doing great.
Now, we're going to kind of start at the beginning. What made you decide to get into ownership of a semi-pro team?
Well, I was actually asked to come check out a team many years back by a good friend of mine, Robert Blake. And I came out to check him out, and I heard about it before, but what I was told, it was a bunch of, like, sandlot type stuff. But when I got out there, to my surprise, it was guys that was trying to aspire or get into another level of play as it relates to football. Mm-hmm. And they seem very coachable and very hungry to do that. And I felt like I could facilitate that. You know, it was something that would be worth my time.
Now, let's kind of even go further back. You are from Augusta. What is the football culture like in Augusta, Georgia?
Wow. Augusta, Georgia, South Augusta, where I'm from, actually, the football culture is hard-nosed, run-the-ball football, toughness over talent in most cases. It's, you know, we have talent, but in Augusta, it focuses on toughness. You know, you about the grit and the grind, and that's what it's about for me growing up from Little League to where I am now.
Now, that culture, that's emblematic of the folks in Augusta, not just the football player. That's what the town is built upon.
That's right.
Now, being a Augusta native, what is your most pride that you have in your hometown? What is the biggest source of pride you have from being there?
Well, one of the proudest things I am proud about in Augusta, with a population so small, when football is going on, everybody is paying attention. You know, businesses close down, schools close early, and follow the teams throughout the playoffs. And that has always been a proud moment for me because of the fact that not just about football, Augusta is a town that somewhat has always been conservative. And sometimes you had a black prom and a white prom, and that changed just in recent years ago. But football has always brought the two races together, you know. And no matter what was going on in city, but when football was going on, everybody was one. So that's something I've always been proud of, being from Augusta.
Now, you attended Georgia Southern, correct?
That's correct.
What was the transition going from Augusta to Statesboro, Georgia, as far as the acclimation you had to make to the local traditions and just the environment?
Well, it was Georgia Southern was comfortable because a lot of us from Augusta had, you know, upperclassmen that went to Georgia Southern. And it was also a small town like Augusta. It was comfortable, so the transition wasn't very difficult for me to make that acclimation, because it was more like people that I knew already. And I was very undersized. I had other colleges looking at me, but my size held me back. I mean, I must have been like 5'7", 155 pounds soaking wet at that time. And I ended up falling to D2 due to that, and I understood that very well, but I love the game so much, I got the free education, and I play ball.
People outside of Georgia and pretty much outside of the college football world, they don't remember Georgia Southern being a strong team, even though they're now Division I. That school has a deep history of talent. Two of the players from two different eras that kind of stand out are Tracy Ham, who went up to Canada, and Adrian Peterson.
Right.
Not the Adrian Peterson, but the other Adrian Peterson. I remember the other Adrian Peterson from all the numbers that he ran up in Georgia. What is his legend like in Statesboro?
Man, Adrian Peterson was that big standout in high school. He was that big standout in college. I mean, he could do no wrong. I mean, he'd come to practice and basically run about three plays, and they sent him home. I mean, it was that kind of party, seriously. Well-respected, hard worker. I saw the first day I met him, I saw NFL coming true with no problem. He was a hard worker and ran as hard as anybody. As you said, sometimes Southern get lost in the shuffle. I thought that, you know, he was better than a lot of backs that came out to the NFL. But the school wasn't very, you know, highlighted at the time. But, yeah, they have some deep history of good football.
Now, as a Georgia native, is Adrian Peterson the most underrated college football athlete in Georgia?
I'd say so. The one that didn't get to everywhere he should have been, and not due to him. But I would definitely argue that for sure.
Do you think that his college football achievements are on par with Herschel Walker's as far as impact for his school and impact to his team?
Absolutely. No doubt. You're talking about a D1 school versus D2 with different marketing venues. You trade places with that, he could be just as good, just as known.
Now, the Tigers and Atlanta itself, the metro area, has a bunch of teams. The state of Georgia itself is loaded with top talent. What makes the Atlanta metro such a dominant football area?
Well, I tell you, it is the mecca of semi-pro. Like, we have so many teams. What makes it so dominant, because you have so many high schools that spit out so much talent, and they're dispersed. Coming from, you know, Augusta to Atlanta, the amount of more schools that stretched all that talent, you know, wide, was different for me, because back in Augusta, there wasn't as many schools and talent was stockpiled in different high schools. So now you got all those people, you know, coming out of high school that don't get into the NCAA or play college football or anything like that, and they still love the game and want to play. So those guys are coming out, they're walking around here every day. You can run into talent almost anywhere in Atlanta, in the mall, in the grocery store, and you're like, man, I know you played ball, like, you know, what you doing now, man? I ain't doing nothing, you know? And so it's just out here. So I think the mecca of semi-pro resides in Atlanta because of the fact that it's so much talent here. I've been working with different organizations trying to get these guys some more looks, because there's so many guys. And I'm not just talking about guys that play for the Atlanta Tigers. I'm talking about the totality of it all. I'm for Georgia football, period, not just Atlanta Tigers, because there's so much talent here.
Do you think at times, sometimes ego and controversy and the love of social media drama tends to derail the bigger plan for Georgia semi-pro?
Absolutely. We talk about it all the time, myself and other owners, Cam Adams, Ty Barnes. We talk at least once or twice each week, and we're trying to find ways to get them to let your game speak your name, as opposed to, you know, saying who you are on Facebook, indulging in different things such as social media, what we call sparring, you know. Unfortunately, the culture of the young people, so to speak, not just Atlanta, but the culture of young people is all about, you know, exposure in ways of what I can or what I have done. You know, and those rivals go back to middle school, you know, before my time in Atlanta. So, yeah, it definitely derails it, because I'm a college, a recruiter for private college, and 80% of our students go through a process of, I'm sorry, 80% of our school recruitment process goes through a scanning process of students' social media before we allow them into the school. So that's a big deal. Schools are looking at that. Businesses are looking at that. And we try to express that to these guys. And for some, they hear us and some don't, you know. And that's just what it is.
Do you think that the want of younger players to jump on social media and kind of run off at the mouth is a product of less strict coaching because of the modern players, their refusal to be coached hard?
I would like to quote one of my most favorite coaches in college football, Nick Saban. You know, when I grew up in Augusta, we was talked to crazy, you know. So when I got to college or whatever, talking to me crazy was a normal thing. Some of these students confuse, some of these young men confuse correction with disrespect. And that's the problem. And so what you do with that, then you run to social media or something and start talking bad about somebody that's just trying to correct you and put you on the right path. And again, it goes back to the generation, the era that we're in. And again, we try to make sure we tell these guys, hey, when I stop talking to you, it is when there's a problem. As long as I'm talking to you, I'm trying to help you. But it's not always going to be stroking your ego. It's going to be correcting you. But it definitely causes problems for them in terms of getting where they want to be. Now, the second part of that question was, is it because of strict coaching or the lack of strict coaching or strict leadership? I completely agree. Not to knock any owners or any leagues or any teams, but our ownership here and our staff have a reputation of turning people away, no matter the talent, you know. Because I've always said, when I'm dead and gone, my brand gonna go on, not just into little league or dance teams, but it'll also go on into business, into promoting businesses. And I want that brand to be clean. And it's a tough job, you know, when you got guys paying to play. You know what I mean? But I've always believed if you don't stand on something, you'll fall for anything. So I stand on that. I got some really good athletes that played for me in years past. I had to let go because they just didn't fit what we were trying to do. And it wasn't just about winning on the field. It's about winning off the field. For every player that played in my organization, he's offered an opportunity to go to school wherever he can that I can put him into to better his life. He doesn't make that choice. It's on him. But the option is there. So we care more about what you do in life than what you do on the football field. And that's very, very important to us.
What made you decide and the Tigers decide to make the jump to the APDFL?
Well, like most teams, the APDFL is something I got into a year after owning the Tigers. And it was a very, very tough league then. Some might say it's not as tough now. But back then, I remember when I got into the league back then, and to be honest, we probably wasn't ready, you know, to be real with you. But I needed them to know the level of exposure and the level of competition as high as it can get in this semi-pro game was in the APDFL. We played in there. I think we might have went 500 or so. About two seasons, we jumped back out and got into another league, the IAFL, the WDFL. We ended up winning the championship in the WDFL, which was a lesser league, but, you know, everybody in that we basically beat. But coming back over the years, I've always felt like whatever I'm dealing with, I'm going to make it better each year. And I've built my program from ground zero, out the mud, as they say. And we've been more talented over the past couple years than we've ever been. And I got guys who could easily walk on and play somewhere, whether it be XFL, NFL, D1 schools, that just haven't had the opportunity. And I don't know a better way to get them that opportunity than to put them against the best. And that's the APDFL.
Now, I've talked to members of the Thrashers, members of the Horsemen, members of the Cobras, to a man. They have each said that the Tigers are going to surprise people. What gives them the inclination to make this decision that y'all are one to watch?
Well, the guy, I tell you like this, man. There's a conversation that's had during the season in the game, and then there's a real conversation had between coaches and leadership, you know, across the leagues. And we're respected. We've earned our respect. Everybody that played us knew that we were one person away, one play away, or a few guys away from being victorious against them or victorious in the league. We're that close. It's not coaching. It's not leadership. It's not ownership. It goes back to the onus on the players doing what they need to do to be successful. And we're helping them do that. I have great respect for the Horsemen, the Cobras, the Thrashers, and we all have communicated very much in detail. But they know that we're a grinding team. That's my background. I always believe that, you know, the personality of the head coach is the personality of the team. And from where my days back at Augusta and Georgia Southern, a grinded out kind of coach, grinded out kind of player, that's who I am. And that's who we are. And we're going to fight you tooth and nail. There's never been a fight we ran from. We played everybody anywhere they want to play at. I mean, always back down to the Opa-locka Chiefs, who were a dominant team years ago in the APFL. But they respect us, but rightly so, we've earned it. You know, we've earned it from those teams.
Now, we have discussed football and philosophy. One of the last football questions I have is this. As a coach, which would you rather have? Two all-world talents, one on offense and one on defense, or four slightly above-average talents who are more coachable?
Second option, slightly above talent who are more coachable. That's my culture. And people don't like that. Players don't like that. There are players that don't like me because of that. But that's just who I am. I was coached that way. I was raised that way. And I can build a business or a program on the back of that guy who's coachable and not as physically talented, but I can get him there as far as being able to play the game the right way. But we're always going to stand on that. I mean, talent is one thing, but when I talk about toughness over talent, I don't mean just physical toughness. I mean mental toughness. As we all talk about this, that, or the other, the biggest problem, I think, in semi-pro, with no disrespect again, is the level of how to deal with adversity. There's adversity in semi-pro, but more than anything, there's adversity in life. And a lot of people that have trouble dealing with adversity in semi-pro, they struggle with dealing with adversity in life. You know, so those things are very, very important to me. Like if you hopping around from team to team, you hopping around from high school to high school, you're not really trying to deal with the adversity of that. I might be one or two of the best players here, and we got everybody that's average, as opposed to I'm going to a team where everybody is highly talented, and I'm going to get a win or a championship somehow. That's not what we believe in. We believe in grinding it out and building from the ground up. I learned a long time ago, I was in semi-pro, and I was trying to recruit a quarterback because quarterback was one of the things we were missing. Recruit a quarterback, and I kept recruiting quarterbacks, and I got a few good ones, but man, were they highly uncoachable, because they had so many, so much ego, so much bad habits. And what I come to realize, you got to coach your quarterback, you got to coach somebody up, you know what I mean? And when I did that, he was mine, you know. I brought him from where he was, or we brought him from where he was to where he is now, and that bold is so much better for us. And it lasted a while and turned our team around. So I would definitely, you know, say, hey, we want to build from the ground up.
Now the fun part of the convo. I got to ask, I've asked everyone in Georgia this question, and it's the first question we lead off. You have a choice. There is a peach cobbler and there is a pecan pie in front of you. You can eat one for dessert every day for the rest of your life. Which one would it be and why?
There's peach one cobbler, man.
There you go. Okay. Woo. Marcus Cortez from the Horsemen is the only person who would say that he would eat pecan pie first.
Man, no way, man.
I'm just making sure because that threw me off. Like, I've told people my grandparents and a lot of my family is from Buena Vista, Georgia, which is northwest of Macon. And peach cobbler, even though I grew up on the East Coast up north, peach cobbler is my all-time favorite dessert. You can't help but to get it right. And if you get it, even
Right.
when it's wrong, you can add a little Cool Whip to make it right. But pecan pie is good,
Right.
but it's not great. Now, other question. Where is the best place in Atlanta to get wings that is not a strip club?
Wing. You said wings?
Yes, that is not a strip club.
Oh, yeah. Wings, man. The best place I go to get wings, my favorite wings, depending on how you want them, but I get my best wings from J.R. Crickets, to be honest. I really do. But when you talk about fried wings, it's J.J.'s Fish and Chicken. Just flat fried wings for the best bang for the buck. You get about 40 wings for like
$10. Oh, my God.
Those are the best. But when you talk about flavor wings, J.R. Crickets, hands down.
Okay, now, where is the one neighborhood in Atlanta that you do not want to be caught in when the sun goes down?
Ooh, it's my city. So, one neighborhood you don't want to be caught in when the sun goes down, man. Ooh, that's not a tough question, but I would say the west side of Atlanta, we call it the Bluff.
Yep.
It's not like it used to be, but it's still the Bluff, bro. It still is. I live on the west side of Atlanta, so I know they tried to put the stadium there and recoup the neighborhood. But if you ride through the Bluff, it's still the Bluff.
Best rapper in Atlanta's history.
In Atlanta's history, man.
History, the greatest of all time.
Andre 3000, hands down.
There you go. See,
hands down.
I know I was talking to Will Black from The Horseman, and he said he thought it was CeeLo Green. I'm not going to disrespect CeeLo Green.
CeeLo Green, you know, he was in the camp, but he ain't no 3,000. He ain't 3,000. Like, he's just not that guy.
As a black man in Atlanta and seeing the changes throughout the state of Georgia, and not just in Atlanta but around towns, what is the next step for the state as far as progress?
The next stage for the step as far as progress is that Georgia leadership has to look like Georgia, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has to look like Georgia. When you see leadership, you shouldn't see it looking like part of Georgia. It has to look like Georgia in an illustration. And when you see it, you're going to say, hey, that's Georgia. I can see why they are leadership in Georgia, because Georgia is representative of all people, you know, black, white, Hispanic, it's everyone, you know, and it has to look like that. When it doesn't look like that, it looks a little biased, to be honest. You can't understand my walk if you never walked my walk. And if you haven't walked my walk, the man next to you in leadership, he has. You can get it from him. And if you don't have that, the trust of the community, it is lost. And Georgia has realized, that people have realized Georgia, if they haven't realized before, Georgia's powerful in this political game. We have a voice. And when that voice is not heard, we scream louder, you know, and let you know we're here. So my biggest thing as far as it relates to the next step in Georgia is make our leadership look like they represent Georgia and not like they represent Iowa.
Now, weird southern, what is the weird southern treat that you like that most northerners won't? For one, I've seen that, I don't understand, you can explain this to me. People put peanuts in soda. Why?
Man, that's going way back right there. That's my granddad was doing that thing. Peanut, that was way back in Augusta. Peanuts and soda, it's the salt for the soda. Peanuts and Coke, to be exact.
Yeah, like, have you ever had it?
Absolutely. There's nothing in Georgia I haven't had. I'm talking about from watermelon chicken grits all the way down to chitlins. I grew up in the South, so we done it all. But peanuts and Coke was my granddad's favorite snack.
I've tried it. I'm like, oh, God, I can't. It just, it's too much going on. It's, like, salty and it's, like, liquid.
Salty and sweet. That's what it is.
Now,
and fish.
Being from Augusta, I'm sure that is known for having tremendous seafood. What is the one seafood spot that you go to when you go back home, and what do you have?
Oh man, to be real with you, the seafood, what I like is it's called a paella. Paella is out of La Fonda, and La Fonda has this seafood rice that is amazing. It's Mexican rice with scallops, mussels, shrimp, lobster, crab meat, all in it. And let me tell you, onions, bell peppers, banana peppers, everything. And you will eat yourself sick because it's so good. It's called paella. Paella.
Now, last question. Now, basically about the state of Georgia, when you look at South Carolina as a next-door neighbor, what do Georgians think of South Carolina as a state?
Off the top of my head, Georgia think that South Carolina as a state is it's comprehensive, so to speak. Everybody that plays football plays for maybe one team, you know, because it's not that big. And those are generally, you know, really good football areas. South Carolina also somewhat, the smaller towns in South Carolina are still somewhat conservative, so to speak. But when we look at South Carolina, that's what we think.
Now, I guess I said the last question, but Coach Milton, I wanted to thank you so much for joining us today on this episode of Under the Helmet. Best of luck to the Tigers. We'll be watching. We can't wait to see y'all play out there, and welcome back to the league.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm glad you had me. I really appreciate us getting some opportunity to talk about our team and what we're planning to do this year. I really appreciate it.
This has been another episode of Under the Helmet. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. Don't eat pecan pie.